There is a castle in Moravia with a history like few others in Central Europe. Spielberg was built in the Middle Ages on a hill overlooking Brno, the second largest city in the Czech Republic. It was a strategic fortress and later prison whose significance went beyond the regional boundaries of what is now Czechia. Vít Bohanka reports.
Climbing up the Spielberg Hill on a clear autumn morning, among the trees tinted with every shade between yellow and red, you get a splendid view of Brno.
It's a steep hill. It's a little bit rocky. It's a quite a difficult place to get onto this hill.
Maud Kotasová is an artist. She's a sculptor. But right now she's my guide and explains the fairly obvious reason why the Spielberg Castle was built right here. By the late Middle Ages, Brno was the seat of the Margraves of Moravia, highest-ranking members of the aristocracy, both civil and military rulers of the eastern part of what is now the Czech Republic. It was a lively city whose development was spurred by the German colonization, hence the definitely not Slavic name of the castle.
It was something like a mirror to the city, and that's one of the interpretations how actually the name Spielberg was created, where it comes from, that it was supposed to be Spiegel, a mirror to the city. So just like a place for some guard, you know, some place for the guards, for the soldiers to look over the city and to protect it.
For quite a long time, Spielberg was a strategically located, if not a particularly heavily manned fortress, says Maud.
There was a military garrison seated here, which consisted of about 40 men, not more, so it was not considered very important. And also, in some of the stages, the castle was just left in ruins. So it was, for example, purchased by the city. So again, the enemy wouldn't take it and wouldn't install its troops there.
Perhaps the best-known military chapter of the history of Spielberg came later, when Moravia was invaded by the Protestant Swedish army during the last phases of the Thirty Years' War in 1645.
In those times, there lived about 7,000 inhabitants in the city. But when they knew how many Swedish soldiers are approaching, when they got to know that, they got really scared. They looked at the castle, and they were sure that it couldn't take 7,000 people. There was not enough place to shelter that many inhabitants. So that's why they just fled. And they left behind some 1,000 or people like monks, students, poor people, lawyers, people that had never fought before. And they had to be trained in only 3 months by 500 soldiers.
So the outlook for Brno and its fortress on the Spielberg Hill was not exceedingly bright. The Swedish field marshal, Lennart Torstensson, came from the north. He wanted to go further south and take the Austrian capital of Vienna. But to do that, he couldn't afford to bypass Brno. No matter how relatively small it was, if not captured, it would be a very dangerous thorn in the side of the Swedish army, potentially a springboard for lethal attacks in its rear. But after a prolonged siege, the Swedes were apparently getting nowhere. They were relying on mercenaries who were becoming increasingly frustrated because they weren't paid. Sick with gout, exhausted and penniless, Marshal Torstensson decided to withdraw and leave. Maud first retells the popular account of what happened.
The legend says that the city was quite tired of fighting. There was no food yet. They were short of everything. And also the Swedish were actually very fed up because General Torstensson originally thought that he would take Brno in one afternoon and continue on to Vienna. And after 3 months and a half, he was getting quite nervous. And so the legend says that he actually decided and told his army that if the city wouldn't be taken by 12 at noon of the next day, which was supposed to be the 15th of August of 1645, then the army would just leave. They would just withdraw and let the city behind. The monk, after hearing that, entered the city via a system of secret corridors. And it was supposed to be in Kráľovo pole. And there's the system of secret corridors, some part of it conserved until nowadays. So the legend says that he entered the city and he ran towards Petr instead of steeple, he actually climbed up the steeple and let the bells ring at 11 o'clock. So the Swedish army thought everything was over, and they just withdrew, and that the commanders couldn't do anything about that.
The true version of the story, verified by historians, is different. But ironically, it is in fact more complimentary and speaks volumes about the defenders' bravery and gallantry.
The Brno's defenders actually could fight their way all along themselves. There was heavy fighting, which started at 5 o'clock in the morning and continued actually until the late evening. Anyway, there was a heavy rain which interrupted the fighting at about 10 o'clock until 5 o'clock. But there were five places actually invaded by the Swedish, and it nearly looked that they would actually get into the city and take it. But everything went successful, and let's come back to Spielberg, because that was the place that actually decided that the Swedish weren't successful. And it was here by the southwest bastion. Because, yeah, the way the fighting went on in the bastions was actually that the miners were trying to undermine the fortification, get inside, and yeah, that's how they actually won that part of the battle. And the Swedish could actually finally undermine the southwest bastion. They got inside, but there were the Dessouches' men waiting at the transversal barrier built inside the bastion, and they killed them. So the rest of them just withdrew and told everybody that this is just, there's no way of going through. And that's why General Thorstensson, late in the evening, himself, ordered the army to withdraw.
Thus, Brno was saved from the invaders to become the capital of Moravia. Its main rival, the city of Olomouc to the north, had been captured by the Swedes and damaged so profoundly that it could never challenge the position of Brno as the regional administrative and economic center. The Spielberg Castle remained a barrack fortress, but as time went by, its strategic significance declined. Although it still housed a military garrison, it also became a civilian prison of the kind that we would probably call today maximum security detention facility. Its casemates, or fortified systems of corridors and dark chambers with extremely thick walls, would in the future house the most dangerous and hardened criminals from the whole Austrian Empire. Maud leads me underground to the Josephine cells.
In 1784, the Emperor Joseph II decided to ban the capital punishment. I'm not saying to abolish, because yeah, that will be long actually for. But he decided to replace it with shackling for life in these wooden boxes. And this was much worse than the gallows previously used, because the prisoners were held here in complete darkness, in terrible cold. For most of the year, there's 5 Celsius degrees here. And of course, they were shackled by their ankles, waist, wrist and neck. These shackles were from 2.5 to 4 kilos heavy. And then there were 1 to 5 chains. Each of them had 10 kilos, and they were chaining the prisoner to the prison bar, so he could barely move. So the prisoners were just sitting here. They were suffering from terrible kidney pain. They were very cold. They couldn't move. They hardly ate anything. They were getting just one bowl of water and a small piece of bread a day, and they were waiting for their death, yeah, in terrible agony. The only light they saw was when a guard actually brought them their only food. And that was all. And he could leave it only at the edge of the cell, because the rules said that there was nobody able to enter. Nobody was actually eligible to enter. So that's why the prisoners, neither they could actually get out, neither for hygiene. So after actually this door closed behind them, that was all. That's where they ended.
No hygiene, no light. Do we know on average how long they could linger in these places?
Yeah, of course we know. We know there are records about the people being placed here. What we know is that due to terrible hygiene, the most common cause of death was terrible diarrhea. And on average, they could survive for about 2 to 3 months.
Later on, this extremely cruel sort of detention was discontinued. But Spielberg remained a very harsh prison with its own share of some of the most infamous inmates, such as Václav Babinski in the first half of the 19th century. He was an outlaw with reputation like few others.
Babinski was, let's say, a modern type criminal because he was tried for 2 murders. He was tried for several ambushes. He was tried for falsifying documents, lying at court. He was just incredible because people just wouldn't dare do such things in those times. And he was such a good storyteller that he could somehow just talk himself out of that. And that's why he got only 20 years of prison. And he was taken to Spielberg in 1841. So that's when the casements were no longer in use. So he was placed in the upper part of the castle and he stayed there until 1855 when the Spielberg prison was closed down. Then he was transferred to Waljice for 5 years and after that he was set free. So he actually lived quite a long life as a free man, as a gardener in a monastery in Praha Rzepy, and there he liked going to a pub and he liked to tell the prison stories. He soon found out that it's quite a good way how to raise his living standard because when he was telling these stories, so the other people just paid his consumption. So yeah, he was leading quite a good life and he was getting more and more popular. So his stories later were published as songs, you know, in printed version and they were sold at markets. And they usually contain stories he wouldn't even invented himself. So what he did was to learn them by heart and to add something more. So that's how he worked on his legend. For example, he claimed that he fled from the castle many times. And of course, as you could have seen the moats, it wouldn't have been possible.
So he kind of created his own legend, yeah? And
yes, of that, yes, yeah. Of course.
As Mort mentioned, the prison at Spielberg was abolished in 1855. Later on, the military garrison that was still present discovered that money could be made by opening part of the old fortress to the public as a macabre prison museum. In order to dramatize the experience, a lot of legends were told by the unscrupulous military guides who didn't care much about historical accuracy.
These are the remains of the so-called rat drain. And there's a legend being told about the prisoners being shackled inside and left to be eaten by hungry rats as the worst punishment in the fortress. But in reality, it's just an advertisement. And it was invented by the soldiers around 1880, because that's when for the first time, the casemates had been opened to public, thanks to Anton Costa Rossetti, who was actually the chief of the military garrison here at the castle, and he decided to bring as many tourists as possible. So he started inventing bloody stories to attract them. In fact, you are looking at a drain which was needed to take the water from the moat, for example, in case of heavy rains. And all the time it was covered by floor because this space always served as military warehouse.
Obviously, sensationalism has been a popular way of advertising since times immemorial. Not that Spielberg really needed it. Its reputation was truly international. Among others, it was promoted by the memoirs of a group of Italian patriots who were held here for a number of years.
The Carbonari were people from northern Italy. They were revolutionaries who wanted to unite Italy. And of course, as the north of Italy belonged to the Austrian Empire, they didn't like this activity. So that's why the Carbonari actually were brought here to be forgotten in their homeland. There were 9 of them, and the most famous of them was the poet Silvio Pellico. They spent 8.5 years here, and Silvio Pellico wrote a book called My Prisons, depicting his prison life. But anyway, he was held in the political tract in the upper part of the castle. Life there was not that hard as in the casements, but anyway, it was hard enough. And he, for example, depicted the amputation of a leg of his companion Maroncelli, who survived this and later died in the USA. But this book told Europe that there's the worst prison ever imaginable here at Spielberg.
In one of the later darker chapters of Spielberg's colorful history, part of it was used as a prison by the German secret police Gestapo during the occupation of Brno in World War II. Chillingly, the old casemates were still open to the public as an example of feudal cruelty, while just a few floors above, very real prisoners were held before being sent to concentration camps in Poland and Germany. And finally, on a more cheerful note, Maud Kotasová shows me newly reconstructed part of the original Southwest Bastion. Yes, the same bastion that played such a crucial role in the successful defense of Spielberg during the Swedish siege in the 17th century. In the past few years, the city of Brno has invested a lot into a thorough reconstruction of the castle, so that it's ready to welcome a new generation of visitors who want to learn something new about the past, not only of this city and Moravia, but the whole of the former Austrian Empire.
Vít Bohanka with that report.